Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're at the Midwest Broadcast and Multimedia. Oh, wait, I messed that up already. We're going to get the title straight by the end of the show. Hang on. Twerk is next.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from these four microphones to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack. We're live in Columbus, Ohio at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. Haven't been to the Lesser Columbus Convention Center, but we're at the Greater
That's
one.
That's in a different city. Yeah.
Different Columbus.
That's in Lesser Columbus.
That's right.
Yeah. And this used to be the Ohio Association of Broadcasters show, but now it's got a big complicated name. It'll barely fit on the badges. Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
The Midwest Multimedia and
got it wrong.
I got it wrong. Right.
Midwest Broadcast and Multimedia Technology Conference.
Would you like to host the show? That'd be just awesome.
Yeah. I'll go crawl behind the couch now.
Hey, I'm Kirk Harnack. Delighted to be here as usual with a great cast of characters, and we're going to be doing the show here for the next hour from this very spot. We're going to talk about all kinds of radio technology, what we've seen here today, and what's still to come. But I ain't the only one here. Chris Tobin is here to add to the party. Chris, welcome into the show. How are you?
Right. Thank you. Thank you. Somebody has to talk to their branding agent, because that's got to be the worst title you can give a trade show. that's just annoying. What is it with broadcasters and branding on their own? They can tell their clients real well how to do their business, you know, frequency, reach, all that stuff. When it comes to our own, we seem to go off into left field. It's like, really? How are you supposed to remember that? How are you supposed to put that on your calendar? I mean, come on. Gee whiz. I just don't get it.
Chris, you look like you're bundled up warm. Is it cold there?
Well, it's about 35 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, it's chilly. Well, I mean, this morning was 25, so yesterday morning is 22. So, yeah, we had a little Canadian cold air come down through the jet stream, but we're doing good now. Tomorrow's going to be 50.
Good. All right.
Canadian. Darn those Canadians.
Well, we're at the convention center here, and we're connected to you via this right here. This is, speaking of spelling things funny, Max Connect.
Dang.
Well, because, you know, the real spelling wasn't available.
No,
was
that's
it?
Exactly right. Yeah, well, I tried, trust me.
But this how you can remember it, MaxConnect.com, MaxConnect.com, and this is how we're connected to you, and it's just amazing. Josh Bone. Are you the inventor of this thing, or what are you?
I don't.
Instigator.
Developer, I guess.
Developer.
Yes, yeah.
Jeff, we usually John. Sorry, Josh. Sorry. Good gosh. And I've been drinking Diet Coke.
Yes, Chad. Can I help you?
What is this box doing for us right now, and how's it doing it?
Well, it's an internet box. It's prioritized LTE, which is the elusive connection that the carriers don't admit exists. It's literally they don't. If you ask them, they'll tell no. They're not doing that. Well, I am.
Yeah.
But no, it's prioritized LTE. You're operating in a different band, a different layer of the LTE service. Basically one click below public safety. So in the same priority as like infrastructure monitoring and things like that. And that's one of the reasons why we have connectivity here with all the other things going on in this convention center.
So if it's me or let's say Secret Service, who gets the priority?
Oh, Secret Service. Sorry, bud. We love you, but yeah.
If it's me or the 200 ladies in the knitting convention down the hall,
they're going to be knitting without.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe they can knit themselves a connection.
Yeah.
So this is designed by a broadcaster for broadcasters.
Correct.
And yes. The benefit here would be I can go do my live remote from the ball game, high school, college, whatever.
Well, tell them where you do your live remote from.
I did an 8-hour remote live from the Indianapolis 500 right in the middle of turn 4.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
With all those fans around.
Three stations, and 8-hour broadcast. We used the Wi-Fi. They could upload all their content to Instagram and Facebook. Used, what would you say?
18 gigs.
18 gigs in 10 hours, oh. Yeah.
Hey, we have
but it worked.
This is Jim Jockjash, Josh Bone, B-O-H-N. This is
John Takash.
John Takash.
Chief engineer in Indianapolis for Radio 1.
Oh, yeah, Radio 1.
Yeah.
And this is Matt Levin.
Yes.
How you doing, man?
He's the only one you can pronounce.
He's been on the show before. Last time you were on the show, we were in Amsterdam.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It was
a very late hour. I'm very tired.
It was. We had a great time. So, as usual, our show is brought to you in part by MaxiTech. Thanks, Josh, for the explanation. We'll be talking about some of the applications here. Sure. I love the story. That's what I love to hear.
Oh, yeah. So that was when he started this off. He goes, I'm going to send you this thing. Take it to the 500. And I did. So we literally, the first year, I drove around the track, and I was like, it stayed connected the whole time. And, you know, finally, we took it and used it for a remote, and it worked.
Why don't we why are we here in Columbus? Because we're at this Midwest broadcast multimedia technology conference.
Yep. It's the OAB.
But KBA was here, Kentucky was here, and Indiana was here as well.
Yep.
So we got that's why you guys are here.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you're Ohio.
Well, Matt's here because he lives 20 minutes away. So.
But, not 20.
But you're in Alabama.
Not today, I'm not.
Does Larry Wilkins know you're cheating on him?
Well, I asked Uncle Larry's permission.
So we're going to talk about a couple of sessions that went on here today. Got some cool, interesting news there. And Chris Tobin's, I'm sure, going to have some stories, and we're going to have some interesting stories about applications. I love to find out how we put this stuff to use. And the coolest under $300 phone and two-way radio you've ever seen in your life.
We're going to talk about Monster Phone.
Monster Phone. That's coming up. We're going to hear first from our friends at where? Hey, I forget which. Are we talking about Calrec? Is that what we're doing next? Yeah, I think we're doing Calrec. See you right in just a second. Okay, see you.
Calrec Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring three slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I/O gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to three independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in four DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks a lot, Calrec, for bringing us This Week in Radio Tech and sponsoring us. Hey, and we're also talking about these cables. Studio Hub is still available. If you call your dealer, they said, well, they don't make those anymore. Well, they do. And they're still Studio Hub brand. They're made in the same factory by the same people and the same quality. These are great. Any of you guys use Studio Hub?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yep.
I have 4 in my backpack right now.
We have these in your backpack?
Yeah, never know. If you're at a site and you need to make a cable quick, you just grab that and you have your cable.
Well, now's a good time to stock up. You know why? Because if you buy the female version of the Studio Hub, this is the classic. This is the one that I think, you know, this is the one where the toilet paper comes off the roll the right way, as I say it. Our friend Mike Dosh at angryaudio.com, When he bought all the inventory at Studio Hub, it came with – somebody ordered 3,000 of these. Oh, wow. This is a 7-foot Cat 5 certified patch cable. It's shielded. It's awesome. It even shows you the Studio Hub pinouts on the label here if you want it. You get one of these free with every one of these you buy. So you get a free 7-foot patch cable with every one of these. Call your favorite dealer. Say, I want a Studio Hub, blah, 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 whatever it is. Now these, you don't get the cable free because it kind of has the cable already on it.
Oh, come on.
This is the wrong way. You don't want to buy these. You want to buy these because Kirk said so.
So you want the Kirk Harnack catfish deal.
That's right, the Kirk Harnack catfish deal. Yeah. Now they do have these in the 6-foot version. So it's got this and then 6 feet of cable, and then whatever connectors you want to put on the other end. So go to angryaudio.com, angryaudio.com. Look up the cables that you need, get the part numbers, call your favorite dealer, and say, hey, I want my free 7-foot patch cable to go on there, and they'll hook you right up. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we got a jovial bunch of guys here. And what, have you guys been out drinking or something?
I don't know.
I cannot comment on that. Yeah,
we were... Yeah, no.
No, yeah.
It was a meeting.
That was a I've been
we freaking, wrote that one off.
That was our breakout session.
So this used to be called the OAB and now Midwest Broadcast Multimedia Technology Conference. What are they? Matt, you're on the committees, aren't you? So tell us about what's the idea of giving it this long name, but being very inclusive, to be inclusive and bring different engineers together.
I think the first question is, Matt, did you come up with the name?
No. But I can tell you, being on the committee, a lot of discussion was had about the name, and they really wanted to keep multimedia in because, you know, a lot of people touching technical stuff in stations now aren't necessarily engineers, you know, in some of the smaller stations. So trying to get people that just have that multimedia background to come and learn more about this, because one of the challenges we have as an engineering community is where are the next generation of engineers going to come from? So trying to keep it open and in general terms of multimedia to try and bring those people that aren't just engineers in, and then provide some sessions that aren't just broadcast. While we do broadcast sessions, we try to provide some generic, just multimedia sessions as well.
Gotcha. Okay. And there are sessions here that were multimedia related.
Correct.
And there were television sessions and radio. And the last session had to do with the ever exciting and popular topic of EAS.
Yes, it did.
But it's stuff we got to know to get it right. Otherwise, yeah, we could get a fine. And, you know, when it works right, it is a public benefit.
Yes, so, absolutely.
And we benefit the public by broadcasting to, you know, we cover everybody with RF waves.
That's why people wear tinfoil hats.
That's right. Matt, you were involved in what, designing some of the sessions or picking what the topics would be?
Basically, you know, I'm assuming the same way at NAB. We get calls for papers or we get papers submitted, and us as a committee go through and go, okay, what are topics that we think apply to broadcasters? And in this case, it wasn't just Ohio, it was Indiana and Kentucky. So we had those folks involved as well on those meetings. To try and help pick sessions that would be the best sessions for those attendees.
What kind of sessions do you think are the best attended? And that's not always the ones you pick, though, I guess.
You know, a lot of times it depends on the topic and how popular that topic is at that specific time. And some of it, honestly, even comes down to the speaker. I think sometimes people that know well-known speakers that are dynamic and can do a good presentation will draw crowds just because of who it is sometimes.
I'm amazed that the session that I spoke in, there were a lot of people in there. Everyone left disappointed, as usual.
Right here.
Yeah. what were so, can you give us a taste of some of the topics that you had that we were new, outlandish, different, things that you thought people need to pay attention to this, even though they don't think they need to?
Well, there were so many, and I was kind of running around, so trying to remember all of them. I've got some paper in front of me. I can't remember all of them. But, you know, obviously the security is something we got to hit over and over again every year. It's, you know, people don't always want to hear that, but it's always changing, and it's important. I know the digital AM thing was kind of a cool new concept that they're trying to come up with. So I wasn't in that, so I don't know how well attended it was. But that's an interesting concept, especially if you've already got translators. You've got your analog service on your translators, go all digital AM. So I thought it was kind of cool. And some of them, like the general sessions that we had at the beginning and end of the day, are things we need to know as broadcasters.
Frank Foti talked about some ways to mitigate multipath.
Yes.
That was kind of interesting. I didn't get to be on the whole thing. We were with some customers on the show floor.
I was in that session.
Yeah?
Yes.
What did you walk away with? He played a lot of... I was in on the last few minutes. He played samples of trying this technique and that technique to get rid of noise and multipath.
Correct.
What do you think his main message was in that?
Basically, that while a lot of manufacturers may tout that they've got multipath mitigation features in their boxes, they may not be as effective as advertised. And he was kind of able to prove that through his demonstrations, that atmospheric conditions play a lot bigger role in multipath than mitigation that may be in a box, a specific box.
Yeah, and I think he even referred to, because several manufacturers, including Omnia, do this single sideband stereo, where that L-R component of the multiplex, mm-hmm, you can kill half of that, right, the upper half, and most receivers are fine with that. They don't care. It's just fine. They still recover the stereo. And the thought was, you know, the higher in frequency you go in the baseband, that's where multipath occurs first, when you have a time shift, a difference in reception. And so the feeling was, the thought was that this would mitigate it. When we do have video of different engineers, video and audio, different engineers trying this out, one of them, Paul Shulins in Boston, showing that it worked very well. But Frank says, you know, more recent testing has kind of shown it's minimally effective. It's not as effective. It's not a panacea. And he was also, I think, talking about the fact that nobody really has a panacea solution to fix multipath. We certainly can make sure that we don't have L minus R that doesn't need to be there. Because that will increase things. And, of course, if you got a lot of multipath, you can always go to mono. not a great solution. But
right. Not a lot of people do music, on translators.
That's what I'm doing.
Really?
Two of my translators, I run mono. Yeah, absolutely.
There, I don't know if they still are, but in Eastern Kentucky, there's a big 100-kilowatt country radio station, Blowtorch. And, of course, Eastern Kentucky is full of hills and hollers.
Right. Yep.
And I'm sorry, I can't remember the call letters, but I would drive by it all the time going to a little Class A station I took care of in Eastern Kentucky. And this station was mono. And it was, you know, 100 kilowatts of mono. But man, you could pick them up, you know, down in the hollers. Behind, you know, you couldn't see daylight for 2 hours a day, but you could pick that station up.
Z104 in Baltimore did that for years.
Really?
Yeah. 50 kilowatt, Baltimore, Maryland. I used to be able to listen to them in Salisbury, down on the Eastern Shore, because they were in mono.
Wow.
And it honestly, it sounded fine.
Uh-huh.
Because everybody was just used to, well, that's the way Z104 sounds. But their footprint was gigantic because of that.
You know, there's a technology that Steve Church and I talked about before Steve passed. Steve and the folks at Telos were working on this on this MPEG surround. Mm-hmm. Technology. And so you can take a surround signal, 5.1 surround, you downmix it to stereo, and you transmit the stereo as usual. You process it as usual. You do whatever you want to it. Just keep it nice and clean in stereo. Another box comes up with, you know, everything that's in that downmix is in the 5.1 upmix. It's all there, even if it was discrete 5.1 to begin with. And so Fraunhofer came up with this shorthand to describe what makes up the 5.1. Where do things go at any given instance? And it's only 6 kilobits per second, this shorthand. And when you decode this, when you take the stereo and you apply the shorthand algorithm to it and bring it back out, you get one like 90-something dB separation between all the channels. It's not a trick, you know, with mirrors and spinning dials and things. And here's my point. You can take stereo and go to 5.1 with that, and broadcasters weren't that interested in it, but we showed it. But you can also take mono and go to stereo with that. So you could. I mean, there's not a radio on the planet that'll pick it up.
Right.
But you could use the same technique that Fraunhofer uses for MPEG surround and do MPEG stereo. So you transmit the mono, you get the benefits of mono. There's a little RDS-style data stream up there doing 6 kilobits per second. Not much. Your radio picks that up, boop, you got stereo. And it's 90 dB separation stereo with the penetration of mono. Imagine that.
That would be pretty cool.
Yes, that would be.
I think it would be. Oh, wow. Matt, you've been involved in some audio processing. How's that going? Is that
good?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was very exciting.
what specifically do you want to know?
Well, you know, in my presentation and others, we've been talking a bit about micro MPX.
Yes.
And my colleagues at Telos now make a box, a piece of hardware. Micro MPX heretofore has, look at a big word, heretofore. Heretofore has been a technology that you could implement on a PC. You could do the decoder on a Raspberry Pi, I believe. Is that right? Yeah. And so you can transmit multiplex. We've been talking about multiplex. You can transmit multiplex FM composite over a 320 kilobit data stream.
Yep.
Right. So that means you can go halfway around the world and put your FM somewhere else. And I've done some experiments. You got customers who are doing this?
Not of mine, but I know I have some colleagues that are doing it. I actually have a good friend here locally that's experimenting with it. So, Hans Van Zutphen from the Netherlands, he's got several people there in Holland that are actually using it very successfully. So
people who are fine with running their processing on a PC and some, you know, some people are, a lot of that in Europe going on, a little bit here in the US, but some people have been waiting, say, why can't I want to do this with an appliance? And so Omnia came out with this MPX node that lets you encode. You take the composite out of a stereo generator and you encode it into this micro MPX technology. You send the IP wherever you need to at, you know, 320 kilobits per second. And then at the other end, you decode it with a similar box and you come back out with, you know, analog composite. Right. Mm-hmm. So it works pretty well. Now, what the heck was my point in going? Well, I talked about it in my session that this is another great application of IP, Internet Protocol. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it seems like almost anything that we, if we can put the technology into IP, then we have a lot of ways to send it, deal with it, squash it, save it, and make some use of it.
Yep. The cool thing, you know, as with all codecs, and Frank talked about this, and I'm sure he probably did as well, with all codecs, you've got, you know, those artifacts, right? And that MicroMPX codec hides those artifacts and what would be the FM noise anyway.
Yes.
So to the user listening in their car, they're not going to hear that, the artifacts of the codec. So it's just such a cool way that they designed this codec, and furthermore, that you can do point-to-multipoint with it. So it's the applications for it, as you guys have said, it's just, we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg here.
For my own use, and I own some radio stations, and several of them we send live wire audio, AOIP, out to, thanks for pointing that out. That's right, I need to plug it in. could you grab that white cable and plug it in over there? That would be awesome. Thank you.
For those that are wondering, Kurt's battery was about to die.
There was a lady here, Judy Gorman, was here before you guys came along, and she was charging her phone. And so I didn't want to ask her to unplug her phone.
Right.
So I thought, I'll remember to plug it in just before the show started.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dead air is bad.
So I'm sending live wire out to a transmitter site. Well, you can do that, but I've written a paper about that. You can find it, but it's a little bit difficult. I mean, everything's got to be right for live wire over an IP radio.
And we're doing that as well. But as you said, it's, if that link isn't perfect, I mean, the slightest little hiccup and you've got some issues.
Yes, exactly. And so a more resilient way to do that at a much lower data rate would be to bring those audio processors that are at the transmitter site back to the studio, then do micro MPX. Now I can send that 320 kilobits per second over the same data link, the IP radios I have, plus I can send them over internet. I have internet at my radio station, but it's a wireless ISP, so it's I only get about 6 megabits down tops, and I need at least close to 10 to do my live wire. Right. And plus, live wire is not meant for the public internet. Ooh. So I could send micro MPX two ways, over the IP link and over the public internet to the same transmitter site, and so I've got more surety of having it work.
And that codec has the robustness in it to handle public internet.
Yes, yes. You can put in with some buffering, and then it's got some keyframes. And
I'm not sure all the magic that they've built into it, but I know that I've had conversations with those guys, and it is designed to handle a certain amount of packet loss and rebuild everything. So it's robust enough to handle public internet.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, I tried it over public internet. It was a prototype of Omnia's box, and I just tried it one overnight and during morning drive, and it worked great. Morning drive, we started saturating our internet connection at the radio station with downloading emails or John Tesh or whatever the heck we're downloading.
YouTube videos,
yeah. And so we got a couple glitches then, but that was expected. Everybody, if you're watching a video, you would have gotten some glitches or some buffering. So the technology is so cool.
Yeah. Like I said, the biggest thing that just is mind-blowing is as this becomes more widely used is that whole point-to-multipoint. So SFNs, which aren't really as popular here in the U.S., but in Europe, for those SFNs, man, that's just huge.
Single frequency networks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so we can drive anywhere in the same frequency, you got the same radio station.
And it's this exact same processing because it's one processor.
Oh, it came out of the same processor,
To all those stations.
Are you saying we're going to sell fewer processors that way? I think so. That's what you just said.
Wow.
Now I'm
better
sad.
Make it really expensive.
It got real, really fast.
All right. So we're here also with Josh.
Where?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
John.
John.
Yes.
Josh and John. Man. So,
trust me, it was fun whenever I worked for him. Because I worked for him, and then I also worked for John Soller.
Oh.
And then I also worked for John Matthews.
Uh huh.
So I was called John more times than I would care to count. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, Josh, you were here at the show and you had a booth. I say had past tense. The show just got over.
Yes.
Just before showtime on This Week in Radio Tech, it just got over. Tell you what we're going to do. Let's take a quick little break. I mean, we ought to bring Chris into the conversation here for a second. Chris, do you have any
questions? Hi, Chris.
he's so, you know, the man is full of knowledge, technology, advice, and sometimes, you know, we just hog the show and he's just there. Call me when you're ready. I got it going on.
So,
Chris,
all right.
You got any questions for
the timing
Matt,
is everything.
Levin,
you'll
these guys yet?
You'll come to learn.
You're muted or something.
No.
No?
No, not muted.
Nope.
Okay, let me try this.
I'm not hearing Chris.
Do that. How about now? Does that work?
Maybe our producer can tell me if I should be hearing Chris or not, because I'm not hearing Chris.
Well, producer says.
I'm not hearing anybody.
Today's show is brought to
you. Not hearing anybody.
All right. Well, I have my chat window open, so if you guys need to tell me something, tell me something there. Tell you what, this is a great time to take a break.
That's right.
Actually, it's not the best time to take a break because I got to do the commercials. So let's do that, and maybe somebody can chat me and tell me what's going wrong with my system here, if it's my fault or what. Hey, our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store. And at Broadcasters General Store, they represent, of course, lots of different brands, but one of those is Broadcast Tools. Now, you know, that's Don Wingate. And Don, you know how he designs stuff. Everything is small, compact, efficient, and the manuals are that way as well. Small, compact, and efficient. Well, the Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4 follows right along with the Broadcast Tools philosophy of making things that are small, compact, efficient, and this one's really easy to use. The Pro Mix 4, get this, it's a mono mixing console because sometimes that's what you need. You don't want disc jockeys to go out and try to do a live remote and, you know, they got the left and the right all messed up and they got the left on some things and the right on other things. The Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4 is mono and it's just as slick as it can be. It has four faders on it with simple on-off controls. It has three mic line inputs and then a fourth line input. These mic line inputs, they're the universal kind of mic line input where they have the connectors that take either quarter inch tip ring sleeve or the XLR connector. It has a monaural balanced line level output. It has a built-in USB codec for computer audio playback and recording. So just like the console I'm using now, it's easy to hook this up to your computer. It's the universal USB audio driver thing, so it just works in so many cases. This console also has a mix minus output. It has an LED output level VU meter, full duplex talkback capability. It has an IFB audio input with level adjustment. And it also has 3/4 inch, those are, you know, the heavy duty ones, have 1/4 inch stereo headphone outputs with independent volume, IFB pan, and program pan controls for custom headphone mixes. There's also an on-air Tally warning light relay output. Now, that's something you won't find on, you know, little Behringer consoles or other ones like that. It actually has a relay output for being on the air. Remote channel control and status via terminal block connectors, and it can drive multiple of the Broadcast Tools AHR1 Plus headphone system. So all in all, this is part of a really cool system. You need to check this out at Broadcaster General Store. You can also go to, of course, broadcasttools.com and look for the Pro Mix 4 at broadcasttools.com. When you're ready to order one, here's what you do. You go to Broadcaster General Store at bgs.cc, or you give them a call. Do you have their number memorized? I've had it memorized for like literally 30 years. Shows you how old I am. No, almost 30 years. Are they 30 years old? They're almost 30 years old. 352-622-7700. 352-622-7700. You know, when I used to call Broadcaster General Store was when I was doing engineering for Sam Phillips, the guy who discovered Elvis.
And yeah,
that Sam Phillips.
Yep.
And Sam would, he knew Carrie and Candy, who, I worked at Broadcaster General Store, and he would say, "Kirk, you call them pretty ladies and tell them to sharpen up their pencils." So he would order audio processing and Kirk, I heard about this Fody guy. You see if we can get one of them processors down here down there in Alabama for me. Yeah.
Vigilante.
The Vigilante, yeah. And then the what was the other one? The 2000. Yeah, it's spam call. There we go. Can't stop the
They're
spam.
Interrupting the show.
I think we're the ones that heard that.
Oh,
yeah. I hope so. So anyway, bgs.cc, give them a call. They're good folks, and you're going to like all the stuff they sell. I was just talking to Dave Kirsten. He was here at the show. Did you see Dave?
Oh, I missed him. Yeah.
That guy is everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, if you order a bunch of stuff, he'll show up and help you unbox it.
I remember he delivered a van full of stuff to me when we were in Cincinnati one night. He said, "Hey, I got your stuff." I'm like, "What?" He's like, "I'm in your parking lot." I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
He showed up with his van full of stuff. Oh, I got here. You can have these towels too. I'm like, "What are you doing?"
So, you know, everybody in has eccentricities, right? So Dave Kirsten, Dave Kirsten, one of the principals at BGS.cc, Dave does not like to sit still. He just can't sit still. He's got to be moving. So, in fact, I got to go down to BGS last week, and I was in the office with them going over some products and information. And they're, you know, Dave is walking all around on the wireless on the phone. He'll go outside and pace around. He'll walk all over the place talking to customers.
Yep.
And he's got his phone there. He can take notes and do everything he needs to right there.
I do the same thing.
Oh, God.
I make laps around my office. And it's bad when the cats follow me because then I turn around and they're like, "What are you doing?"
That's not the plan.
Exactly.
Ooh. John, you're at Radio 1, right?
Correct.
In Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, yes.
So
this week,
what's on your radar? What's keeping you busy these days?
Right now, IT security. So that's a big one. Yeah. Oh. So I literally drove down from Cleveland. I've been up there since last Sunday, redoing all of our networks and upgrading all the security and devices at all the sites and installing Max Connects at all the sites as secondary ISPs. So I mean that's the big push right now with seems like the hackers are getting aggressive against broadcasters here recently, so making a really big push to try to secure everything way beyond what normal broadcasting, you know, would think of.
Do you have a couple of things that are so basic that, by golly, everybody needs to make sure that they have a couple of these things done?
Make sure you change your default passwords. That's one that we find a lot of devices.
On devices?
Devices. Okay. You know, I mean, things you don't forget about. You know, I know on an FMB80, it's kind of hard to change the password, you know, to secure it, but that's how they get in, you know, and then find a way in. So I would definitely, it was kind of shy. It's kind of shocked me how many default passwords I've found traveling around, you know, and that's easy stuff for guys to fix that doesn't cost any money. So that, you know, making sure I've, you know, change the default passwords on your firewalls and, you know, I mean, just simple stuff. Your Ubiquiti radios, like we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, you would be surprised if you just do a scan and you see, you just type in the UBNT, and I'm into your radio now. You know, it's scary, you know.
Now, the people who want to install malware, is that typically done by a user clicking a link and not realizing what
90% of the time, you know, and they might not, you might not even know you got infected when they click that.
Yeah.
It might just sit there.
Yeah.
And it'd sit there for months, you know, and they basically can map your network over time, and once they see all your servers, all, you know, and they think they have the whole network, that's when they crypto lock everything, you know. And it's getting sophisticated, it's pretty sophisticated now, you know, and it's not some kid sitting in his room, you know, it's governments, you know, coming at us.
And it's companies that offer retirement plans.
Yeah.
And they advertise with in other countries.
Yeah.
They advertise with the recruitment agencies,
right,
for programmers.
Yeah.
Show pictures of their building.
Yeah.
I mean, it's out in the open.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Places.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, I heard some advice and it seemed really good. And there's a couple things that you should do now this is a couple of years ago when Internet Explorer was still the browser, but two things.
Just a couple of years ago.
Don't let anybody operate as administrator on a Windows computer.
Right.
And don't let them use Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
And if you now this, it's been maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
If you did those two things,
yeah,
you eliminated something over 95% of the attack vectors.
Well, yeah, yeah. And that's the thing, you know, because I mean, a lot of, you know, engineers out of just ease would make people local admin, so, you know, they didn't have to run around,
right,
you know, and every time they would go to, you know, use a GoToMeeting thing and have to come and install it. But you know, that also means that same user can install any malware program that they want, you know, and it only takes one, you know, so it's a total change in thought, you know, from what engineering IT was to, you know, I mean, you really have to lock your stuff down now.
So in the world of these ransomware programs, and maybe this is not true, maybe you know more about this, but I've heard that most of them, if not all of them, typically will phone home to some perhaps even temporary URL.
Correct.
It may be really goofy. I mean, you never see it.
No.
It may be really goofy looking. But if you're using a DNS service that stays on top of the stuff, or that even has a huge blacklist, and or maybe you're using a whitelist.
Right.
I know a whitelist can be a pain if you want to go to an odd site to do some news research or whatever you want, and it doesn't let you, and you got to call an administrator, take care of it. But at least those programs can't call home and get their crypto keys in order to encrypt your stuff. Is that true?
Well, I mean, they figured out ways around it. They can make it show up and appear that it's coming from a different, you know, country. Because most of the firewalls, you know, Meraki, Cisco, you know, type will block IP addresses from pretty much, you can block every other country except US.
Yeah.
You know, and that helps to some degree. But if it's a nation state actor, I mean, they've got ways to get around that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so it's still a problem. But yeah, I mean, it definitely helps to have, you know, a better firewall, because some of the, I know a lot of times, you know, they don't want to spend the money. Nobody wants to spend the money on the stuff, you know, and it's until you get hit. And then, oh, okay, here's the money. Go buy whatever you need. It's like, yeah, remember I was telling you that.
How do you educate users as to what not to click? And I do a little bit of work in the TV realm.
Yep.
A big company owns the TV station that occasionally uses me to do weather.
Right.
And so, and I get their emails from the IT department, and they send regularly. They send out, you know, they warnings use. And phishing reports, and hey, if you get an email from our CEO asking you to go buy some iPhone cards, you know, some iTunes cards, probably not from the CEO.
Right. Yeah, and I know a lot of companies, they'll send out, the IT department will send out, you know, phishing emails and everything, and then if the person clicks on it, they'll send them a whole nother, you just, you know, got you just clicked on a link that's going to breach the company, you know, and then they'll get more training. They might have to do a webinar and something like that to retrain them on, you know, check twice before you start clicking on things.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's difficult to get maybe non-technical people to think about it this way, but the good general rule is if you didn't go looking for it, you probably don't need it.
Yep.
Right.
Nothing's going to come to you that you have to have. Of course, Windows Up. When are the hackers going to emulate Windows updates?
Yeah. Well,
good job, Kirk. Way to get
Like, I'm the first guy to think of that.
Well, the other thing they're doing now is they're spoofing, you know, the CEO's email address and sending it to, you know, other business people and saying, you know, here's the payroll, you know, and it's, they don't, they're like, well, I usually get a payroll thing. It looks a little different. And they click on it and boom, you know, and it's stupid stuff like that that gets you busted.
My wife got one the other day.
Yeah.
That was, it was asking for her to update the credit card that was expired for Netflix.
Okay.
And it looked legitimate.
Yeah.
And she said, hey, did you let the Netflix expire? I said, no. She's like, well, this is asking me to update. I didn't know it was on my account. I said, it's not. And she's like, oh, hang on. Oh, yeah, this is fake. Because I taught her, typically you go and you look because it has a name, but if you expand it down and it shows you the email address, it's usually
net41.com. I know that guy. That guy emails me all the time.
Yeah, I went to college with him.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if it's fixable on my end, but are we hearing anything from Chris or Suncast yet?
Testing.
I've got
hello?
My systems
New York
turned
calling,
up.
New York calling.
Chris, I'm so sorry.
Me?
I'm not hearing you. I'm sure the problem's on my end. I've got it all dialed in the way it should be. You know what? I would love to just disconnect. Tell you what, let's do. Just because I hate to go through the whole show without any input from Chris. We're going to pause the show right here for just a minute. I'm going to disconnect and reconnect. And we'll fit. And if you're watching on YouTube, you won't even see this part. So I'll be right back. Chris, if you want to carry on for a minute, that'd be great, but I'll be right back. Okay,
free frame.
See ya.
Well, thank you, Kirk. Yes, it's one of those things. Technology can sometimes be a friend or could be foe. And for the IT security and broadcasters, you know, something to think about is transmitter sites, especially, which are mostly unmanned and unoccupied, and a lot of times you do things, you forget that it's out there. Consider a VPN tunnel between your business units, so your main studio facility and your transmitter sites. VPN back and forth, hardware to hardware VPN, routers back and forth. And then consider using VLANs within your facility to sort of create tiers of various platforms and levels for people to operate from. Group policies on your computers for Windows PCs, and make sure that if any changes to the computer need to be made requires administrator access and a pop-up occurs. Those things, that's a start. That helps you to get things along, sort of slows down or creates a barrier to entry for those nefarious folks on the outside of the firewall. And yes, you should invest in a good quality firewall, and try not to do a firewall appliance that's being shared with other stuff. Make sure it's just that's what it does. It's firewall, and then the output goes to your network from there. Can give that some thought. And those are things to consider. And a lot of times, it's just basic common sense. Tell your staff if you have an email comes in and it looks suspicious or you don't know the person, delete it. Don't even open it up, just delete it. If the person really needs to reach you, they'll pick up the phone and call and say, "Hey, I've been trying to email you for days. How come you haven't answered me?" Then you say, "Okay, great. Your email apparently is coming in very strange. Do you know that?" "No, I didn't." I say that because I've had that happen to me a couple of times. I've had strange emails that look almost familiar, and I was like, no, this is definitely not right. And sure enough, never received a phone call. And it's going on 6 months now with those 6 emails. So, good.
I'm so glad to hear. Hey, we hear you now, Chris. That's great. I'd had to reboot something or other. Anyway, we're good.
Of course.
Great advice, Chris. Yeah. I heard a lot of what you said.
Oh, good. Yeah, it does work. It does make sense. VPN tunnels are great. And it's worth the trouble of going to and setting them up between your transmitter site. Or maybe here's something you should consider, because I have a friend of mine who has almost all the programming for their network comes from their announcers who do it from home or off-site, and they produce it at their facility in their headquarters. VPN tunneling from your off-site locations for maybe a morning show, afternoon, middays, or maybe it's a newscast or whatever, put them on the network through a VPN so you're protecting yourself. Because you know why? Let them use their computer at home. They connect to your office, maybe through some portal, web portal they may have, and before you know it, they're a vector for you, for your network. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And it's I worked at a facility where we had 27 remote locations on the move. They were reporters, and their laptops, every time they connected to the network, I had them coming through a VPN tunnel, and then we connected and had all kinds of authentication so that even if the laptop got lost, because we encrypted the hard drives, it didn't matter. I didn't care because they were in their car or at their home connecting to us, and we had everything locked down. In the past, we didn't do that. We just used to let them connect, do stuff, and, we're going to upload to the FTP server. Oh, great. Here we go. So consider these things. Does it take a little extra work? Absolutely. Does it require some extra thinking? Absolutely. But put it in these terms. It's going to cost you $200 for, say, that firewall appliance. Just numbers. I'm not accurate. $200. And for some reason you chose not to go with the $200 one, you went with the $1.75. Then you got in trouble. How much did it cost you for that trouble? Yeah, that's right. The employee list or the client list or it was several thousand dollars. So we invest $200 to save $10,000. That's the approach you need to take with your business office. Do your homework, get things in order, and tell them, hey, for only $500, we can protect our enterprise. Well, what is our enterprise? $10 million radio station, maybe a $20 million TV station. Small details. I'm sure anybody who's been hacked before knows exactly how much it costs.
Yeah.
Think about it. I'm putting it in plain, basic terms. This is not engineering 101. This is not technology. This is basic business. Income, expenses equals cash flow. Assets, liability. Thank you very much. What just happens when you get hacked? Liability. What happens to the cash flow? Yeah. Zero.
Matt, you had something to add about all this.
Yeah, so one of our sessions toward the end of the day today was a speaker on firewall technologies, and he shared an interesting story that I had actually not heard yet. And there was an email thread between one of his customers to one of their customers, and they were working on a sale. And, they had everything figured out, and they had agreed on the price, and they were sending the wire transfer information to the customer. And they sent it, and they got it, but then a second email showed up to that other customer saying, "Oh, hey, no, there was a problem with the account numbers. Here's new wire transfer account numbers."
Oh.
Yes.
And it was in the thread. when it hit their inbox, it was in the message thread. So it looked completely legit, had the same signatures and everything as part of that thread. But it was, it had been, the thread had been hijacked and it was not legit.
Yeah.
I had that happen to a friend yesterday.
Yeah.
I had a friend in San Francisco had the same problem yesterday.
So I guess even when it comes to those kind of things, if you get information and all of a sudden you say, oh no, it's wrong, you need to question that and go back to the sender and go, did you send this corrected information?
Yeah, a phone call can save you a lot of money.
Yes.
So does that mean that the hijacker had to be watching that email? They had to be logged in the email account from somewhere else.
Well, somehow they were able to monitor that email traffic.
Yeah.
And when they saw account numbers come across, money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if what if they, I don't know what email service they were using, but let's imagine that you were using Gmail and somebody was just monitoring you and they had filters set up to watch for certain keywords.
Oh, I'm sure that's what it is.
There's a bank transfer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump right in and tell them made a mistake.
And these are the things, hackers have hooks into these systems long before we realize it.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
And they're just waiting. They've got algorithms that are watching for those keywords, and they're just going to use every opportunity they can to get money out of people.
Well, it's like skimmers for credit cards.
Yep.
I see people complain about that all the time. And, oh, I went to this gas station and, you know, my card got hacked 2 hours later, so it had to be that gas station. Your card got hacked a month and a half ago. You have no idea where it happened. They're not going to immediately get your number and try to hit it. They're going to hold on to it for a couple of weeks or a couple of months.
Or sell it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you have no idea where it came from. It may have been the grocery store that you went to. It may have been the janky gas station you went to six weeks ago that you didn't remember.
Yeah,
so
that's my favorite chain.
Janky gas.
Janky gas.
Yeah, yeah. I've been there.
Try their chicken.
Ooh. I like shady gas myself.
Yeah. Oh man! Hey, we're coming pretty close to the end of our show. We do have a tip of the week. That's a feature that we do. You would not believe we have got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tips of the week this week, all coming up. Did you know about this?
No.
You got a tip. That's your assignment in the next 2 minutes while I'm doing a spot. It's the tip of the week.
All right.
So, I gave all my tips.
Yeah,
Kirk.
We've already given everything away. Yeah.
Now you want me to think.
You got something to talk about. We'll let you off if you show us your phone.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
I'll show you mine if you show me yours. Yeah.
I'll bet yours doesn't light up like mine does.
Ooh, wow. Both sides.
Yeah.
Both sides.
Yeah.
Fancy.
So you want to wait? That'll be your tip.
Okay.
Where to shop for your next phone? Take your life in your hands.
Yeah.
After the break.
As we just talked about security.
Yeah, no kidding. That's right.
Yeah.
Buy this on someone's computer you don't like.
Chris Tobin and all of us will be back in just a minute with hackable phones?
Monster phones.
Monster phones. That's it. This Week in Radio Tech, our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Angry Audio. That's angryaudio.com. And Suncast is going to show you a webpage of some of the cool Angry Audio gadgets, like the bidirectional balancing gadget. So this has got amazing common mode rejection ratio. You can hook up a lightning bolt to this thing, and you won't hear it on the other side. It's amazing what it does. The Bluetooth gadget, now that's new. So this is another way to put your phone callers on the air. Or you got somebody on Skype, but you don't have a computer in your control room to put Skype on to your audio console. Just Bluetooth the audio to this Bluetooth gadget from angryaudio.com. There's the distribution gadget. I think you can guess what that does. There's also the Guest Gizmo. Now, this is part of their Gizmo line. We've talked about this on the show for some time. The Guest Gizmo looks great. And look, it's square. But to put it in the furniture, you drill a round hole and it fits right in there. It is absolutely amazing. There's also the cough. Yeah, the cough is part of the Guest Gizmo. It's got a built-in headphone amp and it can light up those beautiful LED tally lights. There's also the Mic Tally Gizmo. You can guess what it does. It does mic tally. It delivers the driver, especially for those Mika mic arms. There's the Failsafe gadget. You can monitor an audio feed and switch to a backup source in the event of silence. the talk show gadget. This allows you to use one of those really inexpensive audio mixers, like a Behringer, like I'm using right now to do this show. And this allows you to just set those levels and forget them. You don't have to run the cheap faders up and down. Plus, it'll light up a tally light. There's the dual stereo balancing gadget, two stereo unbalanced to balanced converters in a single box. It's all part of the line of gizmos and gadgets at angryaudio.com. Now, we've already talked about the Studio Hub adapters that they have at Angry Audio. And, of course, they got those since Angry Audio took over the entire Studio Hub line. But they also have this other line of items that really will help you out in your studio. The best way to find out about what they have and how they can help you, go to the website, angryaudio.com, angryaudio.com. And, of course, check out Studio Hub. You know and love that. Or if you haven't tried Studio Hub, by golly, you got four people sitting here next to me. Well, three next to me. Bill, if you ever – Bill's off camera. We're going to try to get Bill on camera before the end of the show. But you ought to use Studio Hub connectors and cables and – adapters. I'll tell you what.
Here comes the police. They're coming to arrest people that don't use Studio Hub. Right.
We're hearing sirens in the back. Can you hear this on our
mics? You can hear them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. AngryAudio.com. Go to your, and when you go to your dealer, tell them what you want from AngryAudio.com. Check it out. Appreciate their sponsorship right here on This Week in Radio Tech. All right. We got a few minutes left, and we're going to talk about some tips of the week. And let's see. We'll start with Josh, because you've got this cool thing. What is that?
This is the Monster Phone.
The Monster Phone. Yeah, I'll hold toward the camera.
Okay, yeah. Show the camera, yeah. It's an Android. It's made by a company called Ulefone.
Ulefone.
It's a Chinese manufacturer.
It's a rather inconvenient antenna on that thing. It won't fit in my pocket as well.
Well, the antenna comes off.
Well, how am I going to pick up my cell phone then?
The this actually has a built-in 2-watt 400 to 470 handy talkie.
Wait. What?
Uh-huh.
You mean it's like a ham radio?
It's a ham radio UHF. UHF.
Okay.
You can use it for ham radio. You can use it in the UHF RPU bands. It will do full duplex. It has keying. It has PL tones. All that is built in an app.
Yeah.
That actually keys up the 2-watt transceiver.
Whoa.
Plus it
has... Can you patch the phone to the 2-watt transceiver? That'd be interesting.
No, I don't think you can.
Somebody should write an app to do that.
Somebody should.
I'm sure it's FCC compliant, too.
Well, I don't know because I've had it for 2 days and the serial number's already rubbing off. So but no, it's actually, it's really neat. I was kind of surprised that it worked. I got it, and it has two MaxConnect SIMs in it. I don't even have a regular SIM in it, but it's got two phone numbers.
Yeah.
Because I have... a SIP app on it, and I have it married to an extension on my IPPBX.
Okay.
I've also got Google Voice on it.
Which IPPBX are you liking?
CallCentric.
CallCentric.
Yes.
Is that a hosted one, or is that your place?
No, that's a hosted one.
Okay.
And it works very well. It's, you know, that's what we have our business phones through at the office. And
yeah.
It works great. So, but it also has a built-in 10,000 milliamp battery.
What?
So it has a 10-amp battery.
Yeah, milliamp hour.
Feel how much that waves. Yeah,
that's
now
here's
my daily driver. This is an LG V20 with an external 10,000 milliamp hour battery.
Right.
So I wanted something that was newer because this is 3 years old now, and I also wanted something that was more rugged. This is essentially a tactical phone because it's carbon fiber and rubber.
This isn't the case on it. This is the phone.
That's the phone.
That's the phone.
That is how it came.
Wow. And it even says on the side it's shockproof,
waterproof, dustproof. It actually comes with instructions on how to take underwater pictures with it.
What?
Wow. Yeah.
It's got a push-to-talk switch.
Yep. Push-to-talk. You can key it up.
Can we do a 6-foot drop test live?
So,
well, it was only $280. So for that monster of a phone, it was $280. So if you drop it, just write me a check for $280.
I will put a link to it. You got this at AliExpress, right?
I got it on AliExpress.
Okay.
What's weird is it came 2 days ago. I had a don't post my IMEIs.
No. This is to remind me. No, I'm not posting your IMEIs.
They're all rubbed out anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But one of the attendees today came over and saw this laying on the table. And he looked at it, and he's like, my roommate has that exact same phone. I said, no, what? He doesn't. He's like, yeah, Ulefone 3WT. I'm like, No!
Yeah, I found
he's
it.
He's like, yeah, it's got the HT in it. I'm like, he's like, he's had it for like 6 months. I'm like, where'd he get it? He said he got it on Amazon.
Oh.
I said, oh. I said, what'd he pay for it? He said, $350 or something. Oh, I said, oh, it was $100 more on Amazon. So, yeah. So you can get it on Amazon from a legit buyer or a legit seller.
What?
So, yeah.
AliExpress is legit. Now, AliExpress
is legit. It took 5.5 weeks to get here because it came from Singapore. But, yeah, I've been happy with it. Like I said, I've got an AT&T SIM in it for Max Connect and a Verizon SIM in it for Max Connect.
And that's so, like so that model is the it's ULEPHONE.
No, ULEFONE.
Oh, sorry, phone.
The Armor 3 WT. They have an Armor 3, and then they have an Armor 3 W.
Uh-huh.
But the WT is the only one that has the transceiver in it. That's what the T is for.
So on Amazon, the one with the antenna is $400.
Okay.
You paid well under $300.
Yeah, I paid $280 all in. That was shipped and everything.
Yeah.
So now, like I said, it took 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I, you know, I wanted to get it to try it, and if I'm happy with it, and that's the thing, it has full Android on it. It has full access to the Play Store.
Yes, so the Play Store's on there, unlike some other things.
And it synced to my Google account,
right.
Got all my apps, got all my contacts, had everything loaded up within a half hour.
Wow.
And it's working like a champ.
Wow.
So, monster fun.
That's the monster. That, we'll put a link to that in the show notes, and we'll put your IMEI numbers on there as
Thanks,
well.
Appreciate that.
So people can call you more easily?
No, just shut them off. That's fine. I'll get a nasty gram from Verizon.
Yeah.
John, you're a broadcast engineer, so we're kind of looking in terms of tips. You know, what's been on your radar? What have you found lately that's kind of been helpful? A website or a tool?
Don't tell them about that site we went to.
Which one? I was thinking more along the security lines when you gave me this short thing, and one of the big things that. That really I never wanted to do was multi-factor authentication on everything.
Right.
And I mean, I have locked down accounts. I didn't even know you could lock down with multi-factor authentication to the point my kids cannot buy anything on Amazon now without me knowing.
Oh, what a
shame.
Called,
that's called electronic parenting. Yeah. Is what
but,
that
now, I mean, when you do multi-factor, do you use the system where they text you every time with a
code? Microsoft Authenticator app. You can add that. Google's got an Authenticator app that you can so have one place that just has those codes rolling over constantly.
Okay.
And you know, it's something everybody should really look at, because like I said, I mean, the hackers are on a tear right now, it seems. Yep. So
multi-factor authentication involves two things. Something you know would be your password.
Correct.
And something you have.
Correct.
Which would be only you have.
Correct.
Hopefully only you have. So with multi-factor, you got to have two things to get into your account.
Yeah, you either get a text or you can use an authenticator app like that. So, okay. But yeah, it's well worth it.
I keep threatening to do that at the office, and I get scowls from Paul.
Yeah.
So.
Well, then you should definitely do it.
I know.
Matt, do you have a tip for us?
I'll curtail on our last session that I was in, and the question was asked by a young man about they just put a new automation system, and the automation vendor, who I will not name, said that they had to run the automation software as a local administrator with a common password. And he's like, how do I secure that? So if you haven't already, given that they're getting more aggressive of, you know, towards broadcasters, you really should isolate your automation network. 100%. All your automation computers and the server that they have to talk to get their files need to be on their own little island network. Yeah. And I would even go a step further, and that is block internet, outbound internet access from those machines so that 100%. People can't get on a web browse on them. Because it's way too easy nowadays to download ransomware through web browser and trash your automation network. So you can make backups all day long of your business network. If somebody does it on your business network, you can recover from backups. But your automation network, if something happens, you may have backups. Mm-hmm. And you can restore from those backups, but you're off the air in the meantime.
Yeah.
The criticalness of that automation network is so important. It needs to be on its own little island network. And if you haven't done that, you really need to do that.
Yeah, and the way around that to get audio in and out is create like a jump box, basically, that sees both sides, but you can use SFTP to transfer the file, so it's a blind transfer to get them into the automation system. But yeah, keeping them isolated is critical.
Yes.
Critical.
Yes.
Good to know. Good to know. Yeah. So, Chris Tobin, I think you probably have a tip of the week for us. Have you?
I do. I have. It's, well, since we're on IT security and it's broadcast related, let's go with the threeletters.com. The threeletters.com is GRC. You may know that as Gibson Research Corporation, Steve Gibson. Now, I tell you this because you go there and you do the Shields Up application they have, and it checks to see how your network looks from the outside looking in and the inside looking out. And I can tell you I've used it on many occasions and have discovered several different brand routers have default ports that are open that could be a problem for you. I've used it to verify a few things recently, and it's worked out nicely. And one of them was for a network operation, large network, and they were like, oh, we have this little rack set up in a building rooftop for our blah, 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 and we've been having some issues, and we're not sure why. I'm like, let's see. Where's the control? Several video cameras that overlook the city skyline for traffic. Hmm. And what happens? We lose control of the camera. It just stops working. Hmm. Well, turns out the device was pretty much being seen from the outside, and some bots were just going across and slamming it because it was echoing back an IP ping. So I ran the Shields Up program on their inside of their network at the location, and sure enough, it pretty much almost everything was pretty clear. So I said to them, I said, you might want to change things. Let's try this. I closed all the ports, and suddenly for 4 days straight, they say, hey, it's working great. What'd you do? I said, I'll tell you in an email, and you need to talk to your IT. Left it at that. And then the other thing to look at from the outside looking in is something called Nmap, nmap.org. I've used it once or twice over the years. It's pretty cool. It's an open source free software. It's for security auditing discovery. And you use that to look at your firewall from the outside. And it pings. It scans ports. It does all the necessary security checks, or what they call the pin test, penetration tests. And it's a nice way to do it, and well worth the trouble to go through to set it up and build, put it on a PC with either Linux or I think it has Windows compatible. I got to double check. I've been always doing stuff with Linux, but it's well worth it, and you'd be amazed. And if you have an automation system that can see the outside, you might find it out and quickly want to change that. So those are the two things I would offer up. And the GRC.com, I've used many of their free apps on that site, and I've even used a product called Spinrite. This is not an ad, but if you have hard drive issues, you may save a lot of headaches with using the Spinrite product. It's well worth looking into.
And Spinrite, I've used that a lot, actually, and it can also help recover SSDs. It's not meant to, there's instructions about using Spinrite with SSDs. Good advice, Chris. Thank you. And pen testing, even this basic stuff, can be helpful. I'd like to point out one thing that I've come across at a couple of places with our radio stations. We have, once in a while, we'll have people at home with a station telephone, a SIP phone. And at a couple locations, we have a station apartment in one town that we have a station. And we have a manager with a SIP phone at his house. And all of a sudden, these phones just start ringing and ringing and ringing. And you hang them up and you unplug them. And, a couple days later, you put the power back to them and they start ringing again. And talk to my old friend, Joe Talbot. What's going on? He says, you got some malware in there. You got some open ports somewhere. Somebody. So in both places where the phone would just ring crazily, the cable company's modem router was the router. Mm-hmm. And in each of the two cases, we took an older Microtik router that we happened to have, reset it, didn't have to really program it for much of anything, just the default settings were fine, and ringing stopped.
Yep.
And I said, don't use the Wi-Fi from that cable company's modem and router, and don't use any of the ports that are on the back, except to connect to the Microtik.
Right.
And then use the Microtik's Wi-Fi, and the ringing stopped, and who knows what all was in there. I don't want to spend time finding out, and I don't want to, and if we just swap that with the cable company, well, it's probably vulnerable to the same thing again.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So, these... plenty of old gear out there that has vulnerabilities.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're probably at your radio station. if your SIP phone's, that's a good honeypot, I suppose. Yeah. Put a SIP phone on there and see what happens. All right. Hey, we got to go. Chris Tobin, thank you so much for joining us and being around. We had a blast here. Wish you could have been here, man.
Yes, unfortunately, schedule conflicts. We're doing a lot of video work, and unfortunately, my travel schedule has been totally hampered by this.
So oh, Chris doesn't come.
We'll see what
tomorrow.
Well, I don't mind coming on. I drive out there. Yeah. But, you know, I forgot the name of it again. What's it called? The Ohio, the Multimedia Broadcast. What?
If you don't know the name, you can't come.
How about this broadcast? They let me in here. Conference. Yeah.
No, you forgot technology.
Yeah, there's technology,
technology
there somewhere.
Something. Yeah.
Wow.
Broadcast we technology go. Multimedia. How's that? BTMM. The BTM. It's the BTM conference.
No, what I put it in here. Wait a minute.
The BM conference.
The BMT.
MBMTC.
Yes.
There you go. That's even hard to say than
yes.
Oh, geez.
Matt, pick a new name next year.
Jeez.
Matt,
where's Heiner?
Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah.
Matt, John, thank you for being with us. Safe travel back to Indianapolis.
Yep.
And Josh, good to see you.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate Josh's bandwidth here from maxconnect.com. Hey, we got to go. Suncast, thank you so much for producing our show. As usual, terrific job. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find other terrific shows like Matt Men and What the Tech. And other good stuff. All right, we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.